Welcome to Mom and Daughter Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Monday, April 17th, the Pet Problems edition. I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the homeschool and family travel blog, Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom of three littles, Henry, who's 11, Oliver, who's 8, and Teddy, who's 6. We live in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
I'm Jamila Lemieux. I'm a writer, contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding parenting column, and mom to Naima, who's 10, and we live in Los Angeles.
I'm Zach Rosen. I host another show. It's called The Best Advice Show, and I'm dad to Noah, who's 5, and Ami, who's 2. We live in Detroit, Michigan.
Well, it's Pet Week here at Slate, and we have a question about one of the most difficult parts of being a pet and human parent, dealing with a sick pet. We'll, of course, also have recommendations and dive into our mailbag. Let's start today with our listener question.
Dear Mom and Dad, I'm the single mom of two lovely girls who are aged 11 and 13. I've owned dogs my entire adult life, and about 2 years ago, I decided it was time to get a puppy. They have been very involved in his care and training since we got him, so they're really bonded to him. Unfortunately, this puppy, who's now almost 2, has had chronic health issues that are progressive. We're struggling to even get him stable at this point. His chronic health issues have taken a toll on my ability to do my job, be an engaged parent, and be a good human. My mental health and confidence have taken a huge hit, and so has my checkbook. Recently, a downturn in his health included an $8,000 emergency surgery bill, and he's still struggling. I've decided he needs to be rehomed, and I don't know how to talk about this with my children. I have mentioned in the past that we're doing the best we can for him, but there might come a time where we can't take care of him anymore. Now, that time has arrived, and I have no idea how to address it with my children. There's also a chance that I'm unable to find another home for him, and he'll need to be euthanized. I know it's going to be really hard on all of us, but I don't want them to blame me or for our relationship to suffer because they feel like I gave up on him. I want them to understand that I'm doing this so he can be taken care of by people that have more time to deal with his illness and so I can be a better parent and human. Thank you for all the thoughts and advice. Signed, my dog has a stomachache.
This is so sad. I'm so sorry that your dog is sick and that you are overwhelmed. And this is just such a tough situation. $8,000 in emergency surgery. Oh, man. We have a dog, too. And I'm a big dog lover, and I really feel you. You're in between a rock and a hard place. And your girls, 11 and 13, are old enough to go through this with you. They don't have to lead the process, but there is no reason why they shouldn't be brought into the conversation around what you're going to do and why you're going to do it. They don't need to have the final say, nor should they. This has to be your call. But whether you have to find another home for the dog or euthanize the dog, regardless, this is one of those really critical, challenging, heartbreaking milestones that they're going to go through in their life. And we need practice suffering. We need practice with loss. We need practice with sickness because there's just more to come. And so I think the more open you are with how you're navigating this and how you're feeling about it, the financial piece should also be, you should be open about that. I think our kids need to know that, you know, the stuff in our lives and their lives has a cost, and we work really hard, and, you know, we can't always afford it. You also warn them early on that you might have to find another home for the dog. And if it does come to euthanasia, there are amazing at-home services. Mm-hmm. That you can bring in. In fact, I just interviewed someone on the Best Advice Show. I haven't run that interview yet, but she lost her dog, and what she taught me, in addition to the end of life pet care that is available for you, there's also like some control that you can exert over the situation. If it does come to euthanasia, like between now and the time you put that dog down, the three of you can like go and do to the best of the dog's ability the dog's favorite things. You can feed the dog its favorite food. You can take them to their favorite park. You can cuddle them and really just like know that the, I mean, frankly, the end of your time with a dog is near regardless. Think about what your dog's favorite things are and like make the your last days with them as sweet and as joyful and as cuddly as you possibly can. And then once the dog is out of your house, grieve together and be open with how sad you are, because there's no getting around it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really co-signing everything that Zach had to say. Your girls are old enough to be a part of this process with you, so you shouldn't have to shoulder it all alone. And, you know, they need to understand that loss is a constant part of life. Animals get sick, people pass away, animals pass away. This is just something that they'll have to deal with. And, you know, doing your best to surround them with love, to surround the dog with love in these final moments that you all have together, trying your best to comfort these girls and letting them know that you've done all you can do and that you are operating in the dog's best interest as well.
I agree with all that. I love to think about why a letter writer wrote in to us. And I read between the lines in this letter that they're not sure it's the right choice. Mm. Like that they feel that some guilt that they have this dog and the dog is sick and they are doing things for the dog, but that it's too much. And so I'm wondering if you guys have advice. Because I think if you feel like you can't take care of the dog and you just cannot pour into it the way it needs to be, finding someone that can is the right thing to do, right? But I think that there's a lot of guilt or wondering, like, am I giving up on something? When I get a pet, do I just kind of get them with whatever, you know, troubles they have and it's mine to deal with? Like, do you have advice for that? We have a fish and a snail, and the snail dies a lot and we just replace the snail. Yeah. So I'm not sure I'm the best person to address this, but I just fundamentally read this letter as I'm having trouble addressing this with my older children because I fundamentally don't know that I'm doing the right thing.
You know, you have the resources that you have. You know, most families would not have $8,000 on hand for emergency surgery. So I can imagine that you weren't expecting to have something, you know, cost that much money. And this dog is requiring more of you than you're able to give. You know, the humane thing to do is to try to find people who are able to provide him the care that he needs, as opposed to just simply keeping him, you know, and denying him treatment.
There are amazing foster dog parents and people who love taking on sick dogs. Like, it's a friend of mine, like, that's one of her projects in life, is to like care for dogs that are otherwise unable to live in other homes. And so, yeah, I mean, I think you're going to do your due diligence to find another home for the dog. And if it sounds like he's a great guy, despite the medical issues, which, you know, like Jamila was saying, you can do what you can do, but another family just might have more financial capacity to shoulder that burden. But like, you should not go bankrupt taking care of this dog. It's heartbreaking, but you can't do that. And you know that.
Yeah. And I think we all agree that you can explain that to the kids too. Mm-hmm. And I think even explaining to them that you, like, that you're conflicted about it too, you know, that you wish that that wasn't the way it was. I just think these kids they're old enough. I know when I first read the question, I was like looking, I'm like, oh, there's a bunch of great like picture books about this. And I'm like, oh, the children are older.
And also just consulting with palliative pet care. Google it. There's going to be one in your town, and they will help you move through the decision also before having to, you don't have to like retain them or anything. You can just call and kind of have a consultation, and that will be helpful too, because they've done this hundreds and hundreds of times. Like, imagine having that perspective.
Well, I think regardless of what happens, it's a really difficult decision, and we're sorry that you have to make this and your kids have to go through this as well. So my dog has a stomach ache. We will, of course, be thinking of you, and we would love to hear an update on how things go and what you decide to do and how the kids did. Everyone else, if you have some tried and true advice, it sounds like this letter writer could use it. So send in your stories. You can email us at momanddad@slate.com or send us a voicemail at 646-357-9318. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we will see you back here in a second.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance. Then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now, that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, let's move on to recommendations. Zach, what are you recommending this week?
So this week I'm going to recommend, this harkens back to my fail story from this past Thursday, in which Ami threw up a ton over the course of one evening last week. And a recommendation is, up until that point, we would have a plastic bag if he was sleeping with us to try to catch his puke. I happened to have an aluminum chafing dish in the room to catch the water that was coming out of my baseboard during the winter. And I found that, you know, the chafing dish, it's like, it's kind of soft, so you can kind of like bend it to where you're kind of like putting it right under his mouth, kind of like a bedpan, but in front of his mouth. This is disgusting, but honestly, I think this is helpful because he was throwing up so frequently. Like we would hear it coming, and then I would just grab the dish with one hand and just hold it under his mouth, which you can't do with a plastic bag. You need two hands with
Correct.
A plastic bag.
Yeah,
so the chafing dish enables you to have one free hand to do whatever you have to do, you know, rub his back, rub his head, you know, throw the pillow that he just puked on off the bed. And then, again, I know this is gross, but we've all gone through this. You can go into the bathtub and just rinse it out because you're going to need it again in 20 minutes when he wakes up and throws up again. So aluminum chafing dish as throw up receptacle is my recommendation this week.
I don't know about you, but like growing up, our throw up bowl was like from the kitchen. Which
oh, that's
was always
classy.
Concerning. You know, like it was the big popcorn bowl too.
Oh, that, it was like designated.
Like so I think funny. It was just we didn't use it that much.
Yeah.
But it was like, and for some reason that's always stuck with me is like whatever that's, we used to throw up in is not going to be something that.
Yes. These you can buy at the dollar store for a dollar and then you throw it away at the end of the night.
thrown away or used for garbage or something, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. I love this idea, though. It's like such a perfect, you're right. It's kind of like flexible and disposable, but can be clean, could be reused for the duration for of hours, the incident. Yeah.
It's puketastic.
That's great. All right, Jamila, let's hear you follow that one.
Well, that's a tough one. So I'm recommending a book that I wonder if I, like, it's entirely possible that I recommended it last year. It just turned one, and it's such an important book to me, something I've relied on a bit while I'm writing my book. It's called America Goddamn, Violence, Black Women, and the Struggle for Justice. It's by Treva Lindsay, who's this phenomenal scholar whose work focuses on the lives of Black women. And it's really just a comprehensive look at the lives of Black women in the United States, really our history of experiencing violence intracommunally, you know, at the hands of the police, at the hands of the state. It's just a reckoning with the challenges that Black women face, medical racism, school pushout, and it's just really comprehensive and helpful. And I just, it's something that I wish all Americans would read. It's just like, there are probably things in here that some of you all have wondered about or thought about, but wouldn't know for certain because most of us don't spend our time, you know, seriously considering these issues. But I just think it's a really helpful, really useful book.
That's a great recommendation.
Thank you.
Yeah, great. Have you met her before?
I have. Yeah, we've done panels. Like, we're cool. You know, we've done panels together. We've got mutual friends. So, you know, been an admirer of hers for many years. So excited to see what she does next in terms of books. This is a scholarly work, but it's an accessible scholarly work. I'd really love to see her write a mass book because she just got such an important voice.
Yeah. Jamila, were you just on a show or something, too?
Oh, yes. I was on the Rap Caviar documentary series on Hulu.
Oh.
Yeah, I thought.
About, what
I
were you talking
I
about?
Seen. I talked about Jack Harlow, and I talked about the City Girls. I was in those two episodes.
You're a talking
That's
head.
Really cool.
Once in a while.
Really cool.
Cool. So we recommend that, too. So we can find that on Hulu.
Yes, it's streaming on Hulu.
Great.
I'm making her like, no, wait, go back.
No, you must promote yourself, Jamila.
Thank you.
I am recommending Brains On is one of my favorite like kids podcasts. And they just had an episode called How We Learned to Read and Why It's Hard with Emily Hanford, who, of course, we had on the show to talk about her podcast, Sold a Story. Mm-hmm. This is an amazing episode for kids. Whether you are interested in this topic or not, Brains On always like produces a really funny, fun episode that my kids all enjoy. But this episode in particular is excellent. So go give that a listen. Again, it's Brains On and the episode is How We Learn to Read and Why It's Hard.
Great. Right on.
All right. Well, it's finally time to open up our mailbag. And first, we have a message that was called into our Mom and Dad Are Fighting hotline. And again, you can give that a call at 646-357-9318. Let's take a listen.
Hi, Mom and Dad Are Fighting. This is Aubrey. I'm just calling in response to the camera Slate Plus segment. I actually just recently bought a Polaroid camera for my son just to let him take photos. And it was an intention to bring it on vacation, which has been postponed. But it's just been so fun to see what pictures he takes and what he captures of his little sister and of his life around. So fully support putting the camera in the kids' hands and really enjoyed that segment. Thank you. Bye.
Love it. And Polaroids are so fun, that instant satisfaction. Expensive. Film isn't cheap, but it's such a treat. I love getting my hands on a Polaroid, and I guarantee your kids would too. Great recommendation.
I was just looking to see if I could find like a digital camera for the kids to take so they didn't have to use my phone. So, you know, anyone out there that has a recommendation, like I'm thinking like they must still sell. I clearly have not done my research on this. They must still sell the kind we carried around.
Oh, for
prior
sure.
To...
They're probably $20 too.
I would hope, or at least, yeah. I mean, I just think if the kids could have a real one to take some digital photos, that might be really fun on some of our travels because they do like to take their own stuff, but.
Yep, I just found there's one on Amazon, portable HD digital kids camera, $22.
Yeah, okay. I'll be getting some of those. That sounds perfect. All right, well, here's our next letter. Hi, all. Love the show. Listen to an episode about the six-year-old who told their aunt they had a big belly. I appreciate the direction you were headed with all your responses. Bellies are useful, bodies are cool, etc. And I wanted to push back a bit on some of the other responses. I'm not an expert by any stretch. I think there are smart people doing great work in this area. I'm loving Virginia Soul Smith's podcast lately, but I think we should start moving kiddos in the direction of body neutrality. It wasn't wrong to say something wherein you insinuate someone is fat. It was wrong because we really should be thinking about commenting on people's bodies as a consent issue. And also, fat isn't bad. Fat is just fat. Yes, I recognize we all have our own body image stuff, for better or worse, myself included. Commenting on someone's beauty or eyes or weight or whatever can be super problematic and is often sexist and racist and all the things, usually unintentionally. Obviously, you're not going to get kiddos to stop noticing and recognizing the physicality of others, but I think we should not attach so much judgment to it, i.e., it's okay to comment on the aspect of someone's body, but not on this one. And we should talk more about consent and making sure someone wants us to comment on their bodies. I teach elementary school, and I work on this a lot with my kiddos, my students, and my own. All bodies are good bodies. Yep, bodies are different. That's cool. That's all. Thanks for your thoughtful work. I think this is great advice, like that. I actually love the framing of it as consent. Like, when someone asks us to comment on their bodies, it's okay. Or like, if you have a particular relationship, but otherwise kind of avoiding that because it's a body issue and we consent about our bodies, I think is a nice way to start thinking about it. Because I agree. I think when kids, normally when we comment on someone's like, oh, wow, you look great, I do feel like that is usually in a relationship in which that consent piece exists, right? Or is something that we have the relationship to understand that's a positive thing. And maybe kids can understand this idea of consenting a little bit better.
I like that this letter writer complicates the advice for us.
Me too.
I've never heard body neutrality. I like that as a concept. That's really interesting.
I think we have a hard time with these, right? Because we carry so much baggage for it. Mm-hmm. That it's hard to like, uncomplicate it with our own baggage for kids.
Yes. Yes.
All bodies are good bodies. It's your body here. So all bodies are good bodies.
Mm-hmm.
We actually got a second one from that same episode. Dear hosts, I'm writing with a book recommendation based on the body shaming episode. I highly recommend Bodies Are Cool by Tyler Feder. The book highlights various skin tones, body shapes, hair types, eyes, glasses, and so on. It even discusses bodies with scars, which could be great for talking about surgeries like double mastectomies that might completely change the appearance of someone in the kiddo's life. Most importantly, the book celebrates all different types of bodies that are all good bodies and has created so many opportunities for discussing different races, gender expression, and body size. Might be a helpful tool in shaping the conversation for the letter writer, as well as many parents and other family members. Thanks.
This looks like an awesome book. I'm looking at it right now.
It's a super cool book. I've seen it before.
I'm going to get this.
Yeah, I think this goes back to making sure in your home library and the books that you're getting that all of the, especially if your kids are in picture book ages, that like the people all look different. And I actually, the scar thing to me is so important. We, through some of the Pans and Panda stuff we do, are friends with a bunch of families that have had kids that have had medical issues, and some of them do have scars in very noticeable places. I think that can also go to like there's all kind of skin pigmentation issues and birthmarks, things like that kids are often really curious about. And so just making sure that they're represented too in your home library.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that does it for today. This episode of Mom and Daughter Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson and Maura Curry. Alicia Montgomery is the VP of Slate Audio. For Zach Rosen and Jamila Lemieux, I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. Thanks for listening.